You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELDWEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELDWEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself the Wire. A The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it.
Thanks again for tuning in to the world's only The Wire podcast. The Wire, a show about how the Irish actually were slaves too. So the other one I have is The Wire, a show about one Irishman's pursuit of drink justice and the perfect orgasm.
I like that one. Go with that one.
Okay, sure. Yeah, give us 5 stars and a review on the, you know, Apple Podcast Store or whatever app you use. Helps people see it. And also, you know, text your friends, you know, the podcast, because that for some reason helps people listen to it. It's a weird thing.
Just say it into your phone when your phone's spying on you. So like we get some of that good secret iPhone surveillance engagement.
That shit is real. That shit is real because, you know, I say the word titties a lot, and now all my ads are, I mean, they're usually for like GoDaddy or something, but it's a woman with big titties who's selling it. Mm. So I assume that that's because...
That's specifically for you. You're the only one who enjoys that, so that's why they do that.
I'm the only one who likes titties, mm-hmm. At least that I know of. Yeah. Anyways, the soundboard's making a comeback. Sorry. Okay, so 5 stars in a review. Do it now. All right. Today, Vince and I and a guest are going to be talking about from season 1 of The Wire, episode 10, The Cost. And our guest today, you know him from such amazing podcasts as Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast, also Chapo Trap House, and his third credit, he was recently married. So give it up for recently married man, Matt Christmas.
Hey, hey.
Ho, ho. thank you for coming onto our Wire podcast. We had you on for, you know, talking about The Sopranos. Now we're talking about The Wire. Tell me, do you like The Wire?
Well, I was directly in the blast path, the cultural footprint of The Wire. I was, I had no hope. I was always going to be a huge Wire head.
Yeah,
I was the exact demographic that The Wire is designed for.
Yeah, yeah. You were born that way.
Of course, it worked. And so it's amazing how these people all decided TV was brilliant as soon as it became like micro-targeted towards people who talk about TV on the internet all day.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, no, The Wire, it's like, ooh, it's realistic, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
There's all this salty dialogue and the complicated cases and social commentary. And
I mean,
there's that
everything.
Dickensian aspect, which Simon himself has referenced. What's not to love, you know? It is like a big Shaggy Dickens novel. Like it's if The Sopranos like established that premium television would be modeled on literature and not theater, which was what originally I think a lot of people in the 90s thought was going to be the case. Like the show Oz, for example.
Yeah, I feel like you made the point that Oz and Deadwood are very theatrical. And that was kind of the reason I could never quite get into those.
Yeah, but The Sopranos really set the tone. Nope. It's novels. And The Sopranos is like a modernist psychological novel, you know, the kind that win National Book Award Pulitzer Prizes. And The Wire is indeed, like a baggy 19th century melodrama, like a Dickens, which is compulsively enjoyable. So I enjoy it. Of course, I look back on it, and I think a lot of people have noticed, we were all filling in some gaps here just out of enthusiasm.
True.
But, you know, that's inevitable with everything. I know people say that people always like to compare it to The Sopranos because now everyone has decided that The Sopranos is actually better than they remember it being.
Right.
And again, a lot of that comes down to it being first, you know, establishing the genre in the beginning and like defining what is good. You know, it's hard to fail at holding that category. That's sort of, you know, eternal, but everything else can kind of fall away over time. But I still like it. And I enjoyed rewatching this episode.
Yeah. I mean, The Sopranos had dream sequences and therapy. And I think like a lot of the what makes The Wire good is its lack of dream sequences and its lack of therapy.
I definitely preferred The Wire to The Sopranos at the time for that very reason. I was very much repelled by the psychological stuff, by the mid-century modern shit. Like every dream sequence, I would just do the jack-off motion. Out of here with this shit.
So yeah, I initially loved the dream sequences. For me, I was like, oh man, I've never seen art before.
Exactly. And then, like that's what it is. Baby's first metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then as I, you know, started watching other shows and maybe like developed a little bit more taste, rewatching The Sopranos, I was like, man, they really run this whole therapy thing into the ground. Like it stops being a device like two seasons in and it starts being a crutch. Yeah. Whereas The Wire keeps changing perspective over and over so that it doesn't really have this kind of like static, like this is how we're going to tell the story. It's through the eyes of the cops or through the eyes of the criminals. And much more novelistic to a point where like even just doing a rewatch podcast about it, having someone just watch one episode feels almost like, it's not quite a TV show in that sense. Like there's not really an episode arc as there is like a chapter in a book is what it feels like.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I think that what The Sopranos did is establish that the ideal, again, we're talking about it establishing the ideal televisual categories. And that is that each episode should not only be part of one serialized narrative, but that it should be a self-contained narrative of its own, that it has its own internal story structure that is as satisfying and circular as the greater story, and you know I can understand why that would be appealing.
I mean that's classic TV. What TV does.
Mm-hmm. But you know a thing like The Wire kind of can't afford to do that because it's got so many plot moving parts at the same time. Like you need not a lot of like actual stuff happening to let those kind of to have that ability to, you know, do that character work. You kind of have to just keep moving through the beats.
Yeah, I don't think the Sopranos ever had a plot where I didn't understand it, where there's like multiple things on the wire where I'm like, you explained that way too fast. I have no idea what you're talking about or how this actually works.
I remember you guys have, of course, seen the off-television program, The American Office.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
There's this scene where they Michael and Dwight go to New York to go clubbing with Ryan after he gets promoted to corporate. Mm-hmm. And Ryan is all gacked out of his mind. And they go back to his apartment, and he's crashing. And he's like, I don't know what to do. I might have a drug problem. And Michael goes, I'll tell you what you do. We got to go get your dealer. And then we bust him, and then we flip him. And then we get his bigger dealer.
You tell him that you're his friend and that you're going to help him and that everything's going to be all right. And then you put a wire on him and you find out who's selling him drugs. And then you get that guy and you flip him, you turn him into a snitch. You follow that guy. It's the people who are really, really bad. I've been watching The Wire recently. I don't understand a word of it.
I don't know what they're saying half the time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's almost like such a part of the tapestry of the show that, like, I don't know what the intention was. I don't know if they expected you not to follow it.
I think the writers do of they do like the journalist version of when military guys big dick you by just spewing out like tons of acronyms that they know full well that you don't understand. And so it's just like they just throw them around like it's common usage, and it's sort of like a demonstration of authority. I feel like they're doing that, like the civil servants version of that in this.
That's why I like compare it more to a fantasy novel than anything else, because just in the same way a fantasy novel will throw you into the deep end of their lore and you're just like, fuck, I don't know what a Mistborn is, but I assume that it's an important thing that's powerful. You know, this also will just like throw you in the middle of a conversation that you have no idea what the context is. And then later on you realize, you know, oh, well, that actually... That is what was the catalyst for this next action. So going back, it's a lot more fun to like look at it and be like, oh, I get it now more, you know?
Yeah.
It's like Tolkien, but no one has powers and everyone's sad. So do you have a favorite character on The Wire?
Oh, I'm trying to think of when I watched it, because that was really when I was, you know, vibing hardcore on the program. I mean, I was a sucker for all the characters that everybody loved, like Omar and such.
Of course.
Although I did watch it like before it really blew up, because the thing about The Wire is it was largely under the radar culturally at its first seasons. Because it was like not The Sopranos, and because of it's like it pushes against the grain narratively, like we said, you don't always know what's happening. So it never caught on, and it took a while basically for people to start seeking a new Sopranos, you know?
Right.
And then they settled on that, but only in the very late seasons. So I remember like just watching the show before that happened and being like, damn, Omar's so cool.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's only later after the show gets a little more popular, you know, you look around and there's 10,000 people yelling the same thing. And that's a moment, that's at a point where I anyway was like trying to orient my entire media consumption around being like not like everybody else.
Yeah. Nightmare. Dude, that's the best personality to have, I think.
it's the only one. I have a better taste than you. There's no other morality than that at the end of history.
Yeah. It's like, you like Kramer? Wow. Yeah. Do you like vanilla ice cream too? I'm a George guy.
But I would say, looking back now, like in the fullness of time, and even like how I thought at the time, it's got to be Bunk Moreland.
Yes.
I'm a bunkhead. Completely agree. Bunk is my guy. His sartorial choices, his general suaveness. He's like the perfect, he's embodiment of like all the vices, but also
all the virtues
of that kind of dude, you know?
Yeah. Although, you know, as soon as you start talking about the virtues of this kind of dude, I'm going to accuse you of propaganda.
Oh, Jesus. Everyone's 5 years old. Everyone's a child. You know what it was? So I was saying, like, taste is at the end of history, the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. Well, that was in the decadent aughts. You know, now yes. we're in the Hunger Games 20s here. Like, we're in the austerity world. Everyone knows that the world is ending, that we're going to be eating each other soon. Mm-hmm. And so taste doesn't matter anymore. We have to turn our taste into politics to delude mm-hmm. ourselves into thinking that our consumption is going to change the direction of the ship of state.
I thought Blonde was very unfair to Marilyn Monroe, and this is the thing that I'm going to hang my hat on.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I'm going to rescue this dead woman from an artistic exploration of a popular and historical cultural figure. I'm fucking Jesus Christ, people.
Listen, I really only like biopics that are written and produced by the estate of the person who is the subject of the movie. I need to see the brand fairly represented.
I like when they're still alive so that they can give consent to the production affirmatively.
And yeah, so they can be in it at the end, go, see, I'm good.
Another bit of like Philistinism here is that like this is not a fucking biopic. It's based on a goddamn Joyce Carol Oates story.
Yeah.
It is a riff. It has none. Yeah. Just because it stars a person playing a real person and things happening to them does not make it a biopic. Biopic is that is not just a word that means a movie about a guy. Because every movie is a movie about a guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a box of things. And, mm-hmm. and the whole point of a movie like Blonde is that it is outside of that.
Yeah.
And it's commenting. It's a meta commentary that you can't make. It's not. It's like the Elvis movie, for example.
People are pissed that they didn't do like a cutesy little disclaimer at the beginning where they're like, some of this actually happened, .. And then you see the movie and then they are forgiven if something is true or not true because they've already said, carte blanche.
But the reason I'm saying all this is that now, since taste isn't sufficient to the moment, we're too sensitive and knowledgeable about the world around us and care too much to allow
enjoy things
because fascism really is at the end of the day saying, aesthetics is all that matters and then just doubling down on that. But you want to resist the dark side. And so what does that mean? That means now, instead of my taste as a consumer, it's going to be my virtue as a consumer.
Yes.
Am I consuming things that are good for me? Do they that have vitamins and minerals? And then by other people watching, I of course am not going to change from watching this stuff because I know all this stuff already. But other people are going to see it and they're going to change their mind and they're going to do the stuff that I am not doing to make the world a better place.
Yeah,
that's the fantasy of it. So that means now, we can't have any propaganda. Oh no, that's like that's like trans fats. Can't have that in there.
Everybody's raising awareness, and at some point, we're all going to become
hyper-aware. Then boom.
Yeah, I like being so aware that I'm depressed now. That's where I think
bubbles at the beginning of this episode.
That's right, and this is not a podcast about Marilyn Monroe and whether or not she was fairly represented in that movie by that lady who tweets. No, this is a The Wire podcast. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Pod. Down in the hole. Pod. Down in the hole. Pod.
Pod.
All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, this is season 1, episode 10 of The Wire, The Cost. And this episode premiered on August 11th, 2002. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
I sure can. The boys of summer are back this week with another hilarious adventure as Wacky Wallace decides to visit his sweet old Gam Gam's country house. Also, Orlando is caught trying to buy 4 ounces of heroin and is forced to flip on the Barksdale crew in an ill-conceived buy-bust plan that leaves him dead and Kima badly wounded.
That's right. Well, that's a great description written by David Simon himself.
That's right.
And so what was happening at the time that this episode came out, Vince?
That's right, Matt. We need some cultural context in order to understand the various currents and shifts in society that were happening at the time this was produced. And for that, we go to the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as Advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day. Machine tells the tale, son.
That's right. For this episode, we're going all the way back to August 11th, 2002. Just a bright, sunny day, as far as I know. Some of the headlines that were happening at the time. In the New York Times, scientist denies being involved in anthrax plot.
What?
You guys remember
which
that?
One? Which of the guys they falsely accused are we talking about? The one who killed himself and then they just closed the case?
I knew you would know about this. this one is Dr. Stephen J. Hatfill.
Okay, he's the first guy they falsely accused who didn't kill himself.
Yeah, a germ weapons expert vigorously denied, blah, blah, blah. so a few updates on this guy. In 2008, the government settled Hatfill's lawsuit with a $4.6 million annuity totaling $5.8 million in payment.
Yeah, so, he was the Richard Jewell of the anthrax attacks.
That's correct. In 2020, he became a coronavirus advisor to the Trump White House, where he strongly promoted the use of hydroxychloroquine.
You know what? I don't blame him for really being touchy about the deep state and the pharmaceutical, medical, military complex.
Yeah,
To treat the virus. After the 2020 election, he became part of Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the election results. I don't know what became part of the attempt means.
Where
exactly,
was he radicalized? Oh, it must have been Fox News. Yeah, well, not in this case.
Yeah, well, he also spent a lot of time in Rhodesia and South Africa in the late 70s and 80s. He's got a colorful resume, let's say.
What if he did do it?
What if he did it as
like a false flag deal? That'd be so funny. By himself?
I mean, he definitely, you read up on him, and you're like, I could see why they'd be interested in this guy.
I mean, he has the credentials of a guy who's just going to start sending out anthrax.
It's true. The thing is, then they went to the other guy, Bruce Ivins, and they said, we think it might be him. And then, he's dead now.
Yeah.
He probably did it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the end of that.
He's
dust
not alive.
Off hands.
He's not alive to sue. So at this point, it's gotta be
this
him.
Guy. This guy lied about having been in the special forces.
They love doing that. Reactionaries love that more than anything.
Yeah, he worked as
can you just join the army?
Is that you're not talking about the type of person who joins the army? You're talking about the person who is inclined to worship martial virtues, but is unable or unwilling to display them.
Yeah,
those guys end up lying about it and fetishizing it.
Oh man, that's it's another wonderful personality type. The person who's too scared to be
much of a pussy to pick up a gun. We love those guys.
But it's just you can just buy medals on the internet.
Yep,
and you just pin them to yourself. So. Prove that I'm not in South Africa. Also, is he lying about spending time in Rhodesia in South Africa? Is that a lie too?
Not as far as I can tell. He had a mentor who got murdered while he was a medical missionary in Zaire. He had a lot of weird stuff happen to him, let's say.
Medical missionary in Zaire.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He worked as a medical missionary in Kapanga, Zaire under a mentor.
Yeah,
Dr. Glenn Eshtruth, who was murdered there.
You're missionary. You're always a little,
Well, missionaries can only be good.
Yeah.
Because they believe in God.
Yeah. It's missionary, Peace Corps.
Aid worker.
USAID. Yep. Mm-hmm. These are all
normal, good people who only do good at countries. Some of my favorite blokes.
Yeah. And the thing is, some of them are actually trying to do good, and they have no idea what the hell they're part of.
Yeah.
They think it's a bunch of people doing good.
It's called the Peace Corps.
It says peace right in
it's
the name.
It's in the title.
other headlines. This one you probably remember a little better. Invasion of Iraq is risky for U.S.
nah, I don't think so. That sounds wrong.
Yeah. Who's this guy?
Bush must weigh dangers of Hussein staying in power over obstacles in trying to topple him.
This person was killed too, right, by the government?
No. I'm a deliberate person, the president said before golfing Saturday. So we're in the process of consulting not only with Congress, but our friends and allies. Many lawmakers support Bush's call for Hussein's removal. He's widely believed to be developing chemical and biological weapons and pursuing nuclear weapons. So,
damn.
You know, bad times if that.
So this was a time in America when literally one person said, "Hey, maybe you shouldn't do that."
Yeah. Well, I think they all knew, and then we were just like, "Ah,
yeah, fuck it."
Nah.
Literally, what's the worst that could happen?
This one, this next one I just
you
chose.
Shit all over yourself.
Sorry, I had there to. You go. Yeah, there it is.
Speaking of which, I chose this next one because I really enjoyed the headline: "Asian brown cloud menaces the world."
Okay.
Anybody remember the Asian brown cloud?
I don't remember the Asian brown cloud.
I somehow did not remember the Asian. Oh, wait a minute. Was this like a bunch of pollution?
Mm-hmm. A vast blanket of smog has been documented over much of Asia and the Indian Ocean,
okay,
with alarming implications for the global climate. Scientists call it the Asian brown cloud.
Oh, now brown
name.
Cloud.
Imagine if there had been Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Would have went viral.
So many Asian brown cloud accounts. Dude. All trying to go viral.
Yeah. It is an accumulated cocktail of pollution from Asia's great cities, a dramatic increase in the burning of fossil fuels in vehicles, industries, and power stations, forest fires in Indonesia, and the emissions from millions of inefficient cookers burning wood or cow dung.
Well, good thing is we've solved all of those problems in the intervening 20 years.
Yeah. Well, we had the time, so we did
exactly.
It. Good for
we
us.
We knew it was coming, and we acted accordingly.
The blanket of pollution, 3 kilometers or nearly 2 miles thick, hovers over most of the tropical Indian Ocean, South, Southeast Asia, and East Asia. It consists of sulfates, nitrates, organic substances, black carbon, and fly ash, among several other pollutants.
Well, nitrates are cool.
So, yeah.
Like,
we were,
love a nitrate.
We love a good nitrate. Mm-hmm. Give me a little amyl nitrate. Yeah, get that asshole wide open.
Right, you put a hot dog up there. It's going to taste real good.
Yeah. Well,
so that's what we were doing at the time. We were like, should we invade Iraq? What about the Asian brown cloud? And, you know, that guy with the anthrax? Not him.
Not him.
That was what was happening.
So that is all relevant context for what was happening in America and the world when this episode, The Cost, came out. So let's get into the episode. So this is essentially an episode about breakups. In my opinion, I call it breaking up is hard to do. There's a lot of relationship problems, people reconciling or getting marriage counseling or just breaking up altogether. So we got Bubbles breaks up with heroin, Wallace breaks up with the game, Chardine is broken up with D and might get with Freeman. Omar is breaking up with Baltimore. McNulty is breaking up with his wife and kids, but more importantly, Judge Phelan. And Orlando is breaking up with Barksdale permanently. So what did we think of this episode? Vince, general thoughts?
I mean, I feel like this is like the seasons of The Wire. They seem like they try to go out with a bang a little bit. And, you know, last episode was sort of building some stuff, and this one they're trying to wow you with all the shit that's going on. So it's probably like one of the most procedural heavy, like traditional procedural episodes of The Wire, but then on a deeper level, it's also about how the most dangerous thing that you can do is cooperate and trust the police. It's like I said, like every Wire episode, it's a mix of new stuff with tried and true sort of cop show tropes. And, you know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Matt? Did you like this episode?
Yeah, it's, you know, it starts a little slow, but then it builds to a really, really compelling finale of an app. It's definitely a gut punch that at the time I think did a lot to suck me in.
Yeah,
because the whole thing is it is a slow burn over those first few episodes, so this really helps settle the stakes and make everything feel like real.
Yeah, what I found interesting about it was that I don't think I remember this at the time when I like first viewed it, but in this viewing, realizing how kind of out of left field the buy bust at the end is. Especially since
they don't set that up at all.
Not at all. It just happens so fucking quickly. It's literally Orlando is arrested by an undercover cop, and then one thing leads to another, and they're immediately like, let's use this guy to get Barksdale.
No way.
Why not?
Because a player wouldn't be the name on the liquor license. I mean, face it, you're never gonna get Avon or Stringer in the same room as the dope.
We can take what Orlando gives us about the club,
The money laundering, maybe, or the girls. For that kind of cooperation, I'll drop a few years and call it fair.
So as I was watching this episode, I was like, oh, okay, this is around the time the Kima gets shot. And then I'm watching it, and then they bust Orlando, it seems like, almost 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I guess this took more episodes. It's like, this is just setting that up. That must be in the next episode where they have the bust. And it's like, no, they get to that at the end of the hour.
Yeah. It's another example of every episode that we've watched so far has been this, like, you see this very slow plotting build up to, like, we're getting a case, we're trying to get a wire up. It takes like five episodes for them to actually have a wire in the wire. And in each of these episodes, there is a moment in which they pull the plug and go, no wire. Everyone pack up and go home. And this one, the version of them pulling the plug was all of a sudden they're doing a weird buy bust with the DEA and a guy who has $30,000 who he needs back.
Careful. That's my career you're holding here.
It really, comes kind of out of left field.
I feel like that's one of my favorite things about this episode, though, is like they're methodically building this case, finding out where the stash house is and following the money and doing all these phone numbers, and they got their pegboard in the office, and then all of a sudden, like, someone from on high says, hey, no, you got to do a fucking buy bust. You got to quit it with this shit. So they go into like a half-assed buy bust and get one of their cops shot. I enjoyed the abruptness of it, but you definitely think of it playing out much longer, like in retrospect, because that's how The Wire usually works.
Yeah, no, it was, but it makes sense, because that the playing out longer thing is only what happens with the detail and their own plans. The immediate destruction of everything they've worked for is always on high, like Burrell and Rawls and shit. So it does, it makes sense, but it definitely was like, oh fuck, this is that episode. They've barely set it up. So we start off with, let's talk about Bubbles, because Bubbles has a nice, cute little storyline in this. We open with Bubbles on a bench, and he's looking at kids playing with Bubbles, and he's like, oh shit, that's my name. And then he's desperately trying not to think about how good heroin feels, and then he sees like some drug dealers and some friends that he used to do drugs with, and he's not trying that hard, because why is he in that park? Like, I wouldn't be in like the heroin supermarket if I was trying to get off of heroin.
I guess there's no other public place he can hang out.
Yeah. You assume that that's what it, like, he's just like, well, this is the bench that I sit at sometimes. Where am I going to go find another bench?
Yeah, there's no other benches.
All I could think about when I was watching this was just like how many people you must meet when you're doing heroin. Like, if you have a straight job, you're just like isolated most of the day. Like, you know, you see the same five people maybe once a week, but if you're on heroin, shit, man, you're like the mayor of that city. Everybody
you're
knows
basically
you.
The mayor of the town. That's like, it's like being on Foursquare. Wherever you do heroin, you're the mayor of that town, that square on Foursquare. I did like the, sometimes The Wire does like art, and Bubbles staring at Bubbles was for me a moment where I was like, yeah, I get it.
I didn't even put that together.
Oh, I did, because I'm hella smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because his name is Bubbles, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It works on a lot of levels.
Yeah. Well, one. Mostly one.
Yeah, the word.
Yeah, the word Bubbles.
Meaning the, word. Meaning the thing.
The word.
Yeah,
level.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I think I get it now.
Yeah. No, you probably don't. So then Bubbles then is sitting in the park again. He's talking to Waylon. And I'm loving these scenes with Waylon. I think that, like, this is, again, I said this the last episode, but like the archetype of the like clean NA fucking wise man couldn't be played by anyone else.
Steve Earle,
the guy who's been through it. He's like sitting on a park bench and he's just like, I got AIDS. And
you're just like, bug.
I got the
gave
bug.
It to my old lady.
I got the bug. Gave that shit to my old lady.
You asking forgiveness?
Of course.
What'd she say?
what you needed to say.
It's one of the things that I love about 12-step programs is that, like, you will meet a kind of a tough-looking guy or, like, a scary guy, and they'll just be, like, immediately vulnerable. They'll be like, I got AIDS, and my kids don't, so that's good. Anyways, get your ass to a meeting.
Love yourself some, brother. And then drag your sorry ass to some meetings.
Meetings?
What the fuck you want to hear? That you're strong enough to do this by yourself? Getting clean's the easy part. Now comes life.
Bubble pages Kima, and Kima comes over and says, I'm going to help you tomorrow. You know the thing about tomorrow.
I will gladly help you tomorrow for some snitching you're going to do today.
Yes. Tomorrow does not work out, and we will see why.
God, don't feel me talking about tomorrow. Tomorrow ain't shit. Today, Johnny. Today.
So that's what's going on with Bubbles. I want to talk a little bit about Dee and Chardine's relationship right now. So from the previous episode, we know that Chardine kind of broke up with Dee because,
he helped throw her friend into a roller in a carpet and threw her in a dumpster.
Yeah, well, I mean, every relationship has problems, Mitch. Mm-hmm. Threw her friend in a dumpster. And the first we see Dee in this episode, Dee's baby mama is in the house,
yeah,
just Donette. Yammering.
It's a little weird. It's kind of like he broke up with Chardine, and like all of a sudden his baby mama is just like back in the house immediately. Smash cut to, oh yeah, he's back with her now.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because he's like, his side girl. I think the girl he wanted to be his girlfriend is gone now. Like, mm-hmm. he liked Chardine.
Yeah, did you get that from this episode?
Yeah, no, I got that. I got that. Cool. But I do love watching the contrast between Chardine and his baby mama, because his baby mama literally spends like a minute just outlining all the things that she wants to buy.
So, I mean, there are things we gotta have.
Women be shopping, baby.
Like a real crib. A play desk.
Women be shopping!
The sofa you got seen better days. I think you know that much.
You can't stop a woman from shopping, baby!
Dee, where you going at? I told you I need money for the new bedroom set. Dee!
That's true. Women do shop.
So women be shopping in that scene.
I also love where you be going at.
And, he approaches Chardine. Chardine does not want to talk. And later on, Chardine is, Chardine is straight up working for Freeman at this point. She's just decided
she's a damn narc, is who she is.
She is. She's decided to go full narc. She's snitching. And, again, like, Freeman is straight up just, I don't want to use the word grooming, but he is—he's absolutely.
She's
just
a like, grown woman, okay?
She is a grown woman, but like he's using her to his advantage for this like case. But also, like in the scene where Freeman and Chardine are talking together about what she overheard, they are at a nice restaurant for lunch. And for me, I'm just like, I kind of love that. Like for Freeman, that this is like a secret date for him.
Yeah.
Like she,
he's
hasn't
about to
told
order
her
in French. Like it's super casual.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like Freeman's kind of an incel. Like he's, you know, he's like a nice guy. He builds his dollhouse.
No,
furniture.
No, he's too suave for that.
I don't think
he's
so.
He's just
man.
Biding his time.
Nah, he's an incel. That's the thing. Like think about his thing is he loves to do like puzzles.
Yeah, and he like makes the little furniture.
Yeah.
He's a little 40-year-old version.
He really is. He's following paper trails. He's not opening up packages or else they'll lose their value. You know, he's got cold.
Yeah, but you got to forget that he like dresses cool and he's got that walk. Like, you know, he's like a cool guy.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, some incels, I'm sure, have that like suave vibe. But he, who knows? Maybe, I guess not. But anyways, I think he's secretly taking her on a date that she doesn't know about.
I mean, he's definitely setting up a situation where everybody in her former life is basically going to become like antagonistic towards her, mm-hmm. and he's like the only person that she's going to be able to go to.
Exactly.
That she can talk to.
Isolating her from her friends.
Exactly. Yeah.
Saying everyone else is lying. This is abuse. This is abuse.
I don't really see that well without my glasses.
You don't wear those while you're working, do you, though?
And we'll see more of that as the series goes on. Let's get into the Omar situation here. So where we last left off with Omar is Omar tried to kill Avon in the previous episode. Omar comes at the king and he misses, which him, that's got to be.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, of all the time.
Come on. You should know that one.
That is your thing, bro. Very sad for him. And he ends up getting shot by Weebay and then kind of like scuttling off. You see the first scene with Avon and Stringer is that Avon finally says to Stringer, you were right. What we should do rather than just coming straight at this guy is create a little scheme in which we pretend to parlay. And then when he comes out of his hole, we shoot him.
Yeah, I want you to let him know we're willing to squash this if he is. And then what the fuck if he ain't?
Nah, this nigga live in the town too. He gonna listen. If we parlay,
and then when he creep out his hole and shit, boom, okay,
smoke him.
The parlay, is that like an official street thing? Like, is that like, do they have a code? Like the pirates?
Old pirate lingo.
That's how I know it. That's how I know parlay. I think I know it from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, that's old timey. It's old pirate lingo. Perhaps it persists into our modern urban pirates of the drug trade.
Well,
I don't know.
They are right on the Chesapeake
Bay. I trust
Bay.
These 50-year-old white guys who wrote The Wire to know.
I think they know a little bit. I mean, it sounded like in the scene where Omar talks about doing a parlay, it did sound like they wrote McNulty to be like, parlay, what is that? And I was like, he would know and Omar wouldn't, right? It's
well, again, I don't know how the streets are operating with these words. I have to just give myself over to Simon and Company and trust them that they can give me something that if not isn't realistic in any meaningful sense, at least it's convincing enough to let me enjoy myself.
Yeah. There's enough verisimilitude everywhere else that I can forgive the occasional pirate lingo that mm-hmm. shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean,
it's
piracy
fun.
Is
when
about
they, when they get all
truth.
Like a piratey, it's fun.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, he's like Omar is literally a pirate, so he would
and he's
parlay.
A guy with a coat, so it fits.
Yeah. And so he gets some medical assistance, and then Prop Joe decides to broker a
he does
some
a
peace
weird
talks.
Thing in that scene, by the way. Like Omar is the guy who robs dealers, drug dealers for a living, and then in that scene, like, he basically makes fun of Weebay by being like,
how close did you get? Y'all be chalking that nigga Weebay pop up at the last second, like.
And you know, and then Weebay comes up like, I'm Weebay.
Fucking roasted.
That was the first time I noticed that too. It was like, I would have put that motherfucker in his grave, and if Weebay didn't show up like, meh, meh, like he does a face.
I'm
Weebay. I got guns. Like, what is your job, bro? Like, I did love it. He roasted the shit out of Weebay. He was mostly mad because Weebay straight up shot him in the shoulder, though. I get it.
He's going to Kima and McNulty for help finding like an underground doctor. And I don't know that like that's a thing that cops know. Like, do they know just like doctors who?
I mean, if the criminals know, the cops gotta know, right?
That's the kind of
thing you know if you're on the streets. You know who the? It's always a crooked veterinarian.
Doctor, he's gone.
This is the part of the job I hate.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, and I felt like they cut that scene out.
Yeah, they're
because
probably like,
I was
they
like,
did, because they I guess they didn't want to get too cliche because that is a classic crime cliche.
Yeah,
the mobbed up veterinarian.
Yeah,
I don't know. They could maybe get him to a free clinic where they know somebody. You know,
right.
Just be like, help me out, and don't put him on the record, something like that.
They probably, yeah, they, that's probably what actually happened, and they ended up cutting that scene. Like,
he's, McNulty is banging a nurse at Baltimore General. You can turn on some of that, some of that Irish charm of his.
I know this one lady. She'll help you out. I've been sticking it right in her pussy. That's how he talks. He's got that great.
I'm sure you guys have pointed this out, but how? I mean, he's good, I guess.
Sure.
But it's just such an unnecessary handicap. There are actors not from England that exist.
It's crazy.
You just decide we're doing this show that's about these this grounded. I mean, obviously, you know. Not really, but you know, the premise is grounded street street level crime drama in the American inner city. And you've got your cop protagonist running around going, "Hello, governor.
Yeah.
We're going up the apples and pears, isn't we?"
Oi, that's a Boxtail joint, ain't it?
I mean, it's the classic conundrum of all like American media is like you want to find like the young, rugged American actor, but every American actor has gone through like the Disney machine that turns them into
Ken dolls.
Yeah, they turn them into like sexless fancy boys. And so to find like your rugged, like American looking guy, you got to go to like Australia or England or something.
Yeah, it's brutal. And they're also cheaper.
Yeah.
It's actually cheaper to hire those people. Like, because they don't have any leverage because they're not famous in America. They never really worked in America.
They're
so
cheaper.
You kind of say take it or leave it, and then in order to get into Hollywood, they take the deal.
You can either do this, or you can go back and be on fucking Neighbors for another 7 years.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
Do you think, asshole?
But just come on, just draw a line in the sand.
It is strange because like it does seem like the entire casting of Dominic West as McNulty was almost done as a prank on him. Because,
really? Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in the U.S., you got to get like an actual juvenile delinquent to play that, to get like a young actor who looks dangerous. Like you need to find like a fucking Edward Furlong or one of those people.
Right.
Like they could have done that for this guy, I think.
I mean.
And of course, Idris Elba, he's British too. People, you could say, what about him? He's good at it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have to get an American, for the love of God, just look a little harder.
Yeah.
Because you found a guy who could do an American accent that isn't going to make people just lose concentration every 15 minutes.
And get, like, nervous every time they have a scene. You know, especially when he's, like, you know, acting like he's, like, really putting it on. When he goes a whole scene where he's yelling and his accent doesn't slip.
Oh, God, yeah. When he's man.
And then I'm just like, if it doesn't slip, I almost want to applaud because you did it. I feel like
it's
a
like
proud
watching
papa.
A guy cross the Twin Towers with the fucking on the tightrope.
Yeah,
but they hired him.
Oh, there he goes. Oh boy,
they hired him for the look, and he really is great at looking like a disheveled Irish rascal. Like
it's true.
Yes, they did a great job. It like what makes Dominic West fun in this show is obviously his accent keeps slipping, but he does look like the most Irish fuckboy of any Irish fuckboy in the world. He's got it down pat.
He's also got a fantastic American accent as Jigsaw in Punisher Warzone, if you've ever seen that.
Oh, for real? No, I've not seen Punisher
Warzone. Oh, my goodness. Yes, he plays Jigsaw, a Punisher villain who is an Italian New York mob guy. And so he tries to do like a Guinea accent, like a Stugatz type deal, and it is unbelievable.
Statistically speaking, you shouldn't have been able to survive this.
Well, that's why I'm here, Doc. I have the best plastic surgeon in all of New York.
Your facial muscles, tendons, bone structure, everything. It was destroyed.
Just take it off already.
Why didn't they just let him play it Irish? It's in the name, Jigsaw. Like he's already doing.
He's an Italian guy.
Yeah. Come at me, Punisher! I'll destroy ye. Jesus doesn't like it when you punish.
I'm
the
fucking
villains.
Walking here.
Oh man, yeah, but you know Dominic West, he looks the part, so it works enough. Speaking of Dominic West, actually, or McNulty being a fuckboy. There is a nice little tangent in this episode in which McNulty is like divorcing his wife, and his wife's trying to get like full custody of the kids.
I feel like this is a bad tangent on a few levels, but that's. Like he goes into court, his wife's trying to get the kids from him based on him losing the kids at the mall when they were doing front and follow on, not the mall, right, the farmer's market. They're doing front and follow on Stringer at the farmer's market. And so Jimmy shows up to court with a lawyer that his wife knows he's been fucking around on her. And then they try to have like a scene in the hallway where he tells her he loves her. Like,
I loved that.
There are times when The Wire goes like too far into like cop show cliches, and this was like one of them for me. Like, why is the Irish fuckboy suddenly mooning over his ex-wife for one?
Don't you know I love you, Maggie?
And
I've always loved you.
Two, like his wife.
Yes, I fucked the Jew. I understand sometimes I go around fucking Jews, but who doesn't? I'm only a man.
But then his wife is like entertaining the idea of, like, she's looking at him like he's cute after he came into court with the woman that she has pictures of him fucking around on her with. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reason I like that is because it was the ultimate aloof fuckboy move, because that's what McNulty's character would do. I mean, it makes sense to me that he would, like, he literally was like, this was the first lawyer that I saw in my vicinity when I got the call that we had to do this ex parte fucking, sure, you know, like judgment. And the fact that he would bring this woman who he fucked and then in the exact same scene be like, I love you. That's fuckboy status. Like, that's the most fucky boy of, sure, all fucky boys.
Elena, you went for an emergency ex parte. I grabbed whatever lawyer was standing around.
Oh, she was standing. Hey, ask, ooh, her if she wants the pictures.
Yeah. You know, I can't believe you hired Buckman.
Sorry.
Son of a bitch never made a case that counted.
Yeah, well, he caught your cheating ass.
Look, Elena, these are my sons. I love them. I'm not going to let them get hurt. I love you, too. Still do.
And are the two of you still,
No. Yes. A little.
I mean, you gotta... There's part of you that has to love McNulty being in that scene. I love you, immediate lie, and then coming clean, and then sort of backing up on coming clean. That's...
He's such a cutie. Oh, how can you stay mad at him? And that's why she can't.
Exactly.
She's looking,
exactly,
at him and she's like, oh, McNulty.
It's like the perfect example. It's like, good dick will imprison you. That's the thing, man. You know, that's she can't handle it. It's, but she's, yeah, he's a bad
prison
dad.
Yeah. All right.
Hey, Brent.
You sold,
oh,
it.
Hello. Good dick is a prison, and so are our advertisers. So we need to stop for a break.
Okay. Well, you heard the man. Brent Flyberg says we got to take a quick break for some commercials. So stick around, listen to these ads, and we will be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, we're back. All right. Where were we? Where were we, though? Hold on. Oh, yeah.
The custody
divorce
hearing.
Yeah, divorcing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Divorce stuff. That stuff.
Yeah, well, that's basically done. Let me see. Jimmy and his hot wife have a talk. Yeah. She is hot, though. I mean, that's the one thing I keep remembering.
Callie Thorne? Oh, baby.
I know. She's just...
She was also on Homicide, another David Simon project.
I never saw that. Is that
I love
good?
That show. As a kid, that show was... I loved that show.
Was that network? Was that a network?
Yeah, it was on NBC. It was never very highly rated. It was one of those proto prestige shows where they're trying to grasp at what a good show looked like.
Yeah.
And it went with this very, like, emotionally expressionist approach, where like cameras are shaking around and zooming in, and these like gothic, like it's like this combination of videos, like verite realism.
Was it like the Friday Night Lights kind of thing that they were doing for a while there?
Yeah, I loved it. Andre Brower, all-time goated on that show.
Oh, Andre Brower's on that show?
Yeah, he plays Detective Frank Pemberton, one of my favorite TV characters of all time.
Shit. I need to watch it. I've been like going through all of David Simon's shit and realizing that I just like what he does.
Yeah, Homicide's great. And it is, but it's refreshing, especially to watch now, because it was before this template had been fully created. So they were more free to be cringy, you know?
Yeah.
And also, they mostly resisted serialized storytelling. Later seasons have more structure, like there's a whole gang war that involves the police that is in like the fifth season after it kind of gets more. Over time, the show kind of got more normal.
Wait, there's five seasons?
Yeah.
How many? Holy shit.
Yeah. And they got more normal, like more as like a sort of a cliche cop show as it went along, which makes sense. You know, that's what being on network television does.
Yeah.
But Callie Thorne, ex Mrs. McNulty, she was in the later season cast as one of the detectives.
Well,
and she's a freaking dime.
Yeah, she is a bombshell. I'm in love with her. Yeah. But just to finish up what's going on with Omar, we had Omar. There's a truce being brokered by Prop Joe, who's acting as essentially a marriage counselor.
Yo, this nigga coming on what, man?
Said he would if I guaranteed a parlay, and I'm here on it. I'm doing like one of the marriage counselors. Charged by the hour to tell some fool he need to bring some flowers home. And charge another hour telling the bitch she ought to suck some cock every little once in a while. You know, keep a marriage strong like that. Speaking of cocksuckers.
And Stringer and Omar have this conversation that is, well, he's like clearly wearing a wire. And maybe it's because I'm just like someone who watches cop shows. But all I could think is like, well, certainly Stringer has to know that he is wearing a wire.
I got a man who said he's gonna give you your life back, yo.
Who, Barksdale? So you think after what you did to Brandon, we supposed to find some even on this, huh?
Yo, I don't know shit about shit, all right? I'm just a messenger.
Hey, look here, son, you tell Barksdale that he's been paid back for what he did to my peoples.
I don't know what he called Barksdale, be.
He can't be that careful, but I don't know.
He has no reason to trust Omar.
Right, but to the point where he thinks that he's snitching, because that feels like...
Yeah,
I don't know. Omar's wearing a wire. He's desperately trying to get him to say the words Avon Barksdale exists and give it up for Stringer for not biting at that. He asks Stringer, like, hey, if you want to do a truce, you got to get me $10,000. And that is... apparently just a ploy for him to see whether or not they're serious about the truce. And his storyline ends with him at a bus station with McNulty explaining his reasoning for why he asked for the money.
I got a man who said he's gonna give you your life back, yo.
Now, if he just said, man, we ain't paying you, just be happy to live, I'd have been like, all right, they're keeping it real. When he said, come on down for $5,000, I'm like, man, please. Hey, look here, Holmes, I ain't asked for much, but I'm a little light on traveling money. I'm saying I could go around the block and get myself paid, but I'm thinking.
You keep in touch with my pager. I'm gonna need you for the Gantt trial. Go easy, Omar.
Stay free.
McNulty yelling, stay free. Something about that. I was just
thinking about him cadging like $20 out of McNulty, who sleeps on a mattress on the floor, pulling it out of his like sweaty fucking Velcro wallet. Like,
he's got like a 20 that's mostly singles and a condom. He's like, here you go, buddy. Yeah. Have fun.
Like, there you go.
Yeah. But let's talk about the main storyline here. This is everything that's going on with Orlando and everything that's going on with the detail at the same time.
Is Orlando the stupidest person in the show? Because that's all I could think about.
Wow.
Like, how dumb are you?
Yeah, he's a real idiot. I mean, he's an idiot in a way that I almost feel for him, because he like I have to justify his idiocy because it's so stupid. Where I'm like, well,
like
maybe
I almost want them to
so...
give us something about like he's a drug addict or he has girls that he's paying for. Like, why does he? Why is he bad? Why is he making so little money that he needs to do the exact thing that he knows will?
You know
get
what?
Him
I kind of think of it as when I watched the show originally, my thought that never really triggered me. I thought, yeah, that makes sense because Omar is this guy who's the clean name for the liquor board, but he's surrounded by
Orlando.
All these Orlando, but he's surrounded by all these ballers,
mm-hmm. right?
24/7 ballers, and he has to just stand behind the bar like a fucking limp dick.
Yeah,
and I could see that eventually being like, well, damn, you know this, like I know all these people, like I could just turn this money into this money, mm-hmm. and then I can fucking ball a little bit. And
yeah,
he has to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to ball a little, not. I guess
yeah. Everyone wanted a ball, but I mean, it's at this point, he's already been chewed out and beat up by Avon and Stringer for even mentioning this to D'Angelo. So the fact that he still went for it on his own, because all I could think is like, motherfucker, who are you going to sell 4 ounces of heroin to? Like, once you buy it, how are you going to distribute? Like, he has no plan here. So the only thing I can think is that he's so isolated, like there's such a huge buffer between him and the street level shit that he doesn't fully understand, how dangerous this whole thing is. And I think to me, nothing makes that more clear than after he gets caught by the undercover cop. The next scene with him, he's immediately like, yeah, I'll flip and stuff, whatever you guys need. Like, he immediately flips. And it is, I don't know, Orlando to me is kind of a tragic character because it feels like I would do probably something similar.
I always relate to the guys who try to do crime, to go in the game, and immediately eat shit.
Yes. It's just like That's my lot in life, is to never be able to successfully do anything cool. Like, yeah. And every time I try, just failing fucking miserably and ending
well, they
up
give,
dead.
Yeah, they give him, they have him be ratted out basically by his perfect foil. I forget the guy's name, but the guy who like 3 or 4 episodes ago, McNulty was trying to flip. And he's like, yeah, you're looking at like,
That's
7 years. What do you think? And he's like, yeah, all right. I say, what, all right, yeah. You flip? He's like, no, all right, I'll take the 7 years. I'm not a fucking idiot. Like, I know
that's
it's either
right.
like I get killed or I spend some time in prison. But like,
and that's the guy who sees him at the city jail and is like, hey, guess who's here? Pimpin' ass Orlando.
Yeah, that guy is the guy whose expectations are low enough that he knows that like doing 7 years in prison is a better deal than what the cops are offering him. And how it's going to play out for him.
Right, because he's actually like in the game and understands like the rules and understands the stakes of
the game.
He's
seen that police deal go badly enough that he's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, but then Orlando is visited by the lawyer, Mr. Jewish Esquire. What's his name?
Levy.
Yeah, Levy, who is, props to David Simon for going like, get me the Jewiest lawyer.
Yeah, they really went for it there.
They really did.
Respect.
Yeah. I mean, he had everything that a Nazi propaganda poster would have except for like tentacles. And he just really went for it. And he's had to, I know a few times, had to defend his position or defend that choice to have like the most Jewish lawyer ever. And I'm like, stop making him, you know, talk about it. Like, there are Jewish lawyers who say, listen, as someone who's Jewish and grew up in a Jewish community, Jewish neighborhood, that's what we look and sound like when we're lawyers. That's why we become lawyers. It's just like, we look at, sound the part. You know the kids are going to be lawyers in school. And you're like, yeah, it's the one with the hunchback and the dripping nose. Like, you know, and the rest of us, like, we get into
the dry air is making him wheeze. And it's like, well,
right,
that guy
the dry
is
air is making him wheeze. He needs a desk job to survive. Mm-hmm. This guy's lucky he survived Tay-Sachs. he has a meeting with him and he's trying to, like, get, I guess, the money from... for a bail bondsman, and Levy is not having it. He immediately makes him sign over the rights to his front, and I have a clip of that.
A front has to be clean, and right now, you like that. Sign.
I want my bail paid. You send me a bondsman, I'll sign.
Is that what you want me to tell him? That I asked you to sign and you wouldn't? Hmm? You wanted to be in the game, right? Now you're in the game.
Damn. Got his ass. I mean, that is quite a moment. Someone packing up the fucking suitcase and just being like, now you're in the game. That is, well, you know, Orlando, you fucked up. You're fucked up in the game.
You blew it.
You blew it, bro. You really should have.
To just being the guy on the deed.
He had a good, sweet gig. It was the cushiest gig in all of the game.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything except
you literally are a business owner on paper.
Yeah.
You get to, you're surrounded by titties.
Yeah.
You're day in, day out, you are like just interfacing with multiple titties.
I think the problem. But here's the problem.
What?
All those girls,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to get with broke ass Orlando.
That's true.
They could be getting with any of the Barksdale crew who are in there every night.
Yeah.
Balling.
But don't you feel like
he's still going to be their dick of last resort kind of thing?
Exactly.
Like they're going to do it
some
begrudgingly.
Runoff. Yes. He's definitely like,
it's obviously a sweet gig. It's just, nobody is ever happy where they are, you know?
No
desires ever sated. So over time, that would become intolerable to Orlando.
Yeah, he doesn't like that.
Figure I can make this better if I can ball out more.
It's unbelievable. Because he could have, if he didn't want to work the bar, he hire someone to be the bartender and just have like one little table. You're like, this is the owner's table. And you could put little like awards on it or something. I don't know, whatever people do to make their table look cool. And that's your office in the corner. And then you have one stripper who's always stripping for you. And you're that cool guy. Your name is on the strip club. I don't know. I just feel bad for him.
We need to find you an Avon so you can be the Orlando.
I would love to. Are you kidding me? The clean name on the liquor license? Mm-hmm. Fuck yeah.
By the way, in the beginning of this episode, I'm sorry, I'm skipping around, but...
No, please.
It was a little confusing when Weebe rolls in calling Avon A, and then like 12 seconds later, Stringer is calling him B, and I'm like, come on, can we get like a consistent letter for this guy? What the fuck?
My fault, A. You gotta build a wall around you, B.
We're gonna build the wall. We have no choice. We have no choice. Build that wall. Build that wall. Build that wall.
Well, Stringer calls everyone B.
Right.
He called Omar B. I think B is just
plus B for Barksdale could be.
I thought originally that, but then he called Omar B. Mm. And I was just like, he just calls people B.
Yeah, right.
Back then, in the early aughts, people called people B.
Yeah.
I'm Cuban B.
Yes, Cuban B.
I don't even know what it stood for. I assumed as a kid that it was.
You didn't have to juxtapose it with Weebe calling him A.
Yeah, that's true. I'll tell. Just DM David Simon and tell me fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
So Omar is he's all locked up, and meanwhile, Lester and Sidner and Carve they're all looking at this stash house that they kind of figured out was the stash house from the episode before, and they're forced to like sit at a Mondo Mart, just waiting for someone to use the payphone, which is, I think, another cushy gig, and cops complaining about that annoys the shit out of me. And then Sidner comes into the van that they're using to surveil the payphone at the Mondo Mart and kind of just rips into Carve for eating two different types of chips.
Well, he's eating crab chips, which I've never seen crab flavored Utz around here. I don't know if that's just like Chesapeake
only. I
think
that's just in the Maryland area, the Delmarva triangle there.
Wait, they were crab chips?
Crab chips. That's crab chips.
I didn't know. I had no idea that he was eating crab chips. I heard him
in the second season, there's a scene where White Mike,
oh, yeah.
the dealer, He goes, or it might not be him, but it is another white drug dealer on the corner, and he gives money to some kid, and he goes, "Yo, shorty, go get me a Snapple and some crab chips."
That is a very Maryland brand of chip. That's
incredibly Maryland chip.
That is, that sounds pretty disgusting. But I feel like
sounds good.
I mean, Sidner was being hella judgmental at the fact that he's like, cheese puffs and ringdings. It's like,
I've been sitting here for 12 hours. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, what does he want him to do? I feel like Sidner needs to cool it with the body shaming.
He's a hothead.
He is. He's a problem.
And he's very built. He's swole.
Yeah, he is a little too swole to play a homeless guy who's following someone to a stash house.
He's the most unconvincing undercover they got.
Yeah, it is very funny.
It's like, because, is this your first day smoking crack, dude?
Did you just do crack now? And where did you get this clearly made up homeless guy crackhead suit?
Yeah.
They finally do catch someone, using the phone, and Sidner follows them all the way to a stash house that is clearly a stash house because it's got cameras everywhere. And they end up kind of like going through it and trying to, take pictures, and they have all this probable cause. But Freeman does not want to bust the house. He is about the paper trail, so much so that... there's this scene in which Carve and Sidner are trying to get Freeman to... They're trying to find out, what do we do next with all this information? Like, shouldn't we bust these guys? And Freeman just walks over to Prez and starts praising him for being a good little special boy. because Prez is, like, gotten... all of the fronts like mapped out on a map.
He used the right color highlighters and everything.
So what? We try to write a warrant for this place, right?
Right.
What are you seeing?
No pattern, really. Except this cluster of old storefronts and warehouses on the west side of downtown.
Mm-hmm. Storefronts?
Vacants, usually.
Detective Presbuluski.
What?
You have a gift for the paper trail.
Presbuluski. You have a gift. You have a gift for the paper trail. Like, I just love... Because that's a... Presbuluski at this point has shot up his car and blinded a 16-year-old kid for sitting on his car.
And he shot his wall, too. You forgot that
And
part.
He shot a wall. Yep. Like, the amount of stuff that Presbuluski has done that would make you go, like, I don't feel like complimenting this guy or putting him out on the street ever again... Freeman doesn't care, man.
Well, that's just David Simon trying to tell you why the keyboard is mightier than the gun.
That is 100%.
I mean, yeah, it's more pandering to the audience.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
The best cop is the guy who stays at home and looks at the computer.
Yeah, that's 100% true.
Yeah,
just like you. So they end up stealing their trash, looking through it, blah, blah, blah. And at this time, this is when Orlando's undercover cop guy shows up and tells them, hey, we got this guy Orlando.
Yeah, so
and
I like this, the way this plays out, because mm-hmm. like the whole, like the larger plot here is all these cops are having such a good time getting into, you know, playing this cat and mouse game. And even McNulty, when he's talking about Stringer in the courtroom with his wife, he's like, oh, no, like, I know this guy. We're just playing a game. Like,
yeah, we're friends.
They're getting into the game part of it because, like, the other, like, the actual thing that they're doing, which is fighting a drug war, like, none of them actually believe in that.
Right.
Or at least, you know, the show doesn't believe in that. So it's like,
yes.
You gotta, you're watching them play this intense game and getting into it on the level because it's a game, but not because
right.
they're like invested in any of the like ideology behind it.
Yeah, they've gamified it, and I think for the audience too, it's more fun. Or
right.
at least for me at this point, well, it's
more
fun.
You're gonna get into a procedural because of the game of it. You're not necessarily, but like usually, like especially around this time, I feel like cop shows. We're also still partly invested in explaining like why the game was good and why, mm-hmm. you know, why this game like actually mattered. Whereas I think the Wire, at least a little bit, is giving you a peek behind the curtain to say that, yeah, okay, the game ultimately doesn't mean much, even if you're
right. But what's fun about it is that they've gamified crime and stuff. Like, right. It's not like other cop shows where it's just like, here's your moralistic reason for why this is important and necessary. And like, you may have a broader critique about, you know, crime and the drug war and whatnot, but at the end of the day, this is a bad guy and we got to take down the bad guy. In this show, they're like, no, if we try to take down the bad guy now, then we're not going to fully get the bad guy, but more so, we're not going to have fun playing the game.
Yes, we're not going to collect all the stickers.
Yeah.
We're going down to escrow and finding all. It said B&B Enterprises, and I went down and I found all the papers that said B&B, and I noticed the pattern. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Presbo's doing word searches just like Rawls is, you know, fucking over everyone in the world just to make his numbers change color.
Yeah. That's the thing is, at the end of the day, Rawls wants the numbers to change color. Prez wants to find all the words in the word search. And Burrell just wants to bust. This guy loves to bust. Mm-hmm. And
Bustin' makes him feel good. Bustin' makes me feel
good. Because they have Orlando, this momentum starts for this idea of, oh, well, we got to use him to do a big buy bust. We'll get him in the room with Avon because, that'll happen. Daniels has a scene where he's trying to, like, convince Major Forrester and Burrell, like, hey, we can't do this. What works is the wire. The wire is what gets us Avon. And Burrell just says,
bye. Bus, Lieutenant. It's what I asked you for months ago. It's what we do successfully, time and again, to
we
make
bust.
These cases.
We bust. That's
we
what
bust.
We must. I have busted successfully for 20 years at this police department. This entire department is filled with my bustings.
You're asking us to stop busting. Oh, yeah, sure. You're promising that if we stop now, later on we'll get an even bigger bust.
Mm-hmm. Bullshit.
Well, why should I trust you?
Sure, I could stop busting for
why should
few
I
minutes.
Say goodbye? No to the reliable daily bust that I've become accustomed and, in fact, addicted to.
I just love the idea of just like, all busts feel the same to me. There is no larger bust. There is only one mono bust that every man feels and loves. It's like these guys just don't know about ass play.
Yeah.
So
I've put off busting for too long on this case.
Yeah, my balls will get swole if we don't bust.
Look, it's not fair for you to leave me like this. It's fucked up.
It should be illegal, Lieutenant, for you to leave my balls such.
It's fucked up.
You could
up.
At least get some hand stuff.
Yeah.
Misdemeanors.
We need a hand to hand.
Some hand to hands. Busting makes me feel good. So, yeah, from that. Immediately, we just dive into a scene in which Daniels is in a room leading a giant buy bust team with his unit, with Orlando as bait. And the DEA is there they're just there to help give $30,000 in cash. It seems like they don't have any other job other than, well, we have real money. Which they need back, which I fucking love. He's like, my career's in that bag. And when they're describing...
Orlando didn't ask for enough details here, I feel like.
Clearly not.
Like, you guys are going to be in the car, like right behind us, right? Like, we'll be around. We'll be sort of nearby. Don't worry about it.
You guys have like helicopters with like missiles and like snipers on the roof and stuff, right?
No,
I'm the president, right? I'm the president of this buy bust. As president, I need to make sure that I am well protected. He doesn't even ask. He's just
He's like, yeah, they probably know what they're doing. They don't. They don't know what they're doing at all.
And Carve is the one in this scene. Dumbass Carve is the one who's like, hey, isn't this stupid? And I have a quick clip of that.
We've got $30,000 in buy money, courtesy of our friends over DEA. But the thing is, they can't have that money walking on.
Definitely not.
So Kima will be in the car for the buy, fronting as our CIS girl.
Looking the part, too.
Yeah.
And where's your weapon going to be?
It'll be up under the rear seat.
They already know that he got jacked on a reverse buy, right? Why wouldn't they assume he's snitching?
I need money for a lawyer, right?
That's the story.
And it's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
A story that is believable and everyone will buy.
You know what's the biggest, one of the biggest questions I have about this episode?
What?
Was like Dominic Lombardozzi, was he going through like contract negotiations while they were shooting this? Like they made up an arbitrary reason to be like, oh yeah, Herc, he's just out of this episode. He's not going to be here.
Service training.
He's doing a thing. Don't worry about it. He's not going to be here. Okay. Stop asking.
That's a good question. There was just no, he didn't show up at all in this episode.
No, not at all.
It's just Sidner and Carv the whole time.
Herc is returned to his home planet of New York.
He's just back in the Bronx like, I asked for more money, all right? And unless they give me more money, I'm not doing any more wires. Yeah, I do not know what happens. And in fact, I'm trying to think if he shows up the rest of the season. He does, right? He's got to
come
back.
No, he comes right back after this episode.
It's weird. This is like
feels so weird where like you're watching Seinfeld and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, Elaine's got a thing she's doing. She's going down to Orlando to go to Disney World. And it's like, okay, sure.
Maybe they just wrote him out because they were just like, this Dominic Lombardozzi is getting too big of a head. You know, he thinks he's the king of this.
He had something else to do. I don't know.
Yeah. But so it ends up being Carv, who is the one who says, isn't it obvious that they'll know he flipped? And, you know, if Carv thinks something is short-sighted, then you know everything's about to go wrong very, very quickly. So Kimura and Orlando, they roll up. They pick up Savino, who turns up the music so that the wire can't really hear shit. And, you know, the cops are trying to listen, but rap music is blaring and cops hate rap music. Mm. They're just like, what is this noise? And so no unit has an eyeball on Kima and they pull into a random alleyway and Savino steps out and he leaves the money, which if ever there was a sign that something is very wrong, it's when the drug dealer is like, here, hold on to this money for me. I'll be right back. It's like, what else? What do you think's about to happen? Because at the very least, if the drug dealer's trying to just fuck with you, he'll just take the money and be like, I'll be right back with the drugs. If they leave the money, you're probably about to get shot up.
Yeah, run.
They're going up north. Stay loose.
I got the dub.
Shit, it's too loud.
Something ain't right.
Snitch.
Signal 13. Signal 13.
Gunshots.
Show citywide. 11:35. Signal 13.
So that is the signal 13 that's been talked about a lot in this. So far, every signal 13 that's happened in this show has been a lie. It's been like, when they went into the towers, like Presbyluski and Herc and Carv going in the towers and they basically start a riot by blinding a kid and just jacking up random old people and being like, we own these streets. And the other signal 13 was when Presbyluski, apparently, you never see it, but apparently before he got to the detail, he shot up his car, and called in a signal 13 and pretended that he was under sniper fire. I we still don't know the origin of that story.
I forgot to put it in park when he was doing a traffic stop, I like to think.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. Yeah. But yeah, the signal 13 is called in. This time it's real. The last we see of Orlando, he is dead in the front seat of the car. And when they finally get down to Kima, she is badly, badly injured. It's very loud. Everyone's screaming and crying. The cops are there. And the DEA is looking on. And he's also sad, which leads me to believe that they took the money, too. Because his career was in that bag, you know.
His career's in that bag.
My career. Yeah. And then we see McNulty holding on to Kima. And then it fades out. And then the music plays. And that's what happens. in that episode.
Well, you forgot one key part of this episode, which was
what? What's that?
Which was Wallace.
Oh, sure, sure.
We had to flip Wallace, which, I mean, you know, I mean, I know because I've seen the show twice, but you also know that him working with the police is not going to go well for him.
Yeah.
Like, he just goes in there and he immediately starts snitching. And yeah. It's like he starts
snitching.
He feels
bad about the stick-up boy.
Yeah. And they don't even have a plan for him. Like, they have no place to put him. Like, he's thinking that...
They have no charge on him.
He's thinking that they're going to protect him somehow. And like, I do like those scenes when Daniels... he plays, like, the father figure. And he does it really convincingly. But, like, it's very thin because he never has a plan other than to be like, we'll just take him out to his grandma's and shit'll be fine. Or, I'll just give this kid my business. Like he knows how to play the daddy, but not with like an actual plan.
Right. He knows how to sound like a daddy, but he has no daddy powers.
Right.
That's the thing about, Lieutenant Daniels is like, you see him in a couple episodes ago, there was that kid, the kid who was blinded by Presbuleski's in there, and he tries to daddy him too. And he's like, listen, if you ever want to get out of this game, you could just, here's my card. Call me.
Yeah.
And let me know if you want to get out of this game. And it's like, are you adopting him? Right. How are you going to get him out of this game?
He thinks by the magic of telling people to straighten up and fly right that it'll become so. And
you keep your nose clean. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can help you get out of this game. How? Let's not think that far ahead. We don't need to get into plans and schemes right now. The only thing we need to think about is how much of a daddy I sound like and how much I love you. I'm proud of you, son.
I think the lesson I took from that is like, if you're going to snitch, like,
kiss your daddy. I'm sorry.
Don't start saying shit until you know they have a plan for you. Like they have like an actual program or like money to put you in a place. Like, otherwise they're just going to send you right back to live in the project with the people that you snitched on.
The worst thing is that like when Daniels is trying to like figure out where to put him, he's like, what about a hotel? And Rhonda's like, a hotel? He's 16 years old. We're not going to put some little kid in a hotel. Yeah. People would think that's weird.
He's going to be putting the aftershave on his face and going, and trying to eat cakes all day and shit.
It's like it's Home Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to rig the hotel room with booby traps. And then when the wet bandits come, he will hurt them. And that'll be our problem. Anyways, they end up taking Wallace over to his Gam Gam's house. And also need to mention that while he's like eating Twizzlers and detoxing, you hear Clay Davis on the TV. We're going to be getting some more Clay Davis as the show goes on.
Shit. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not right.
Yeah. Shit.
Fuck.
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah.
He does have that voice. Like his voice is just cuts through all background noise whenever you hear it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Davis, yeah.
You know, it's why he became a state senator. He just has the beautiful voice. That beautiful baritone sheet. He ends up going to his grandma's house and he hears crickets for the first time. A detail where I'm like, come on. you think that's the first time he heard crickets? Is that possible?
I was dumb enough to believe it. I don't know.
No, I think that's true.
You think so?
Yeah.
Crickets,
where would you encounter a cricket?
Crickets are everywhere. They just end up everywhere. I don't know. I feel like I grew up in Los Angeles and I heard crickets, but crickets, I guess Los Angeles is not like a really urban city the way Baltimore
it's an anti-urban city.
It's a giant suburb.
Yeah.
We got crickets.
Exactly. So, of course, we have crickets.
Yeah.
I don't know if the concrete jungle of the Baltimore projects would necessarily have that same vibe.
But he has watched TV. He knows of
he's been exposed to all that cricket content that you see.
There's cricket content. It's usually
Jiminy Cricket. He could have Googled it. Like,
okay,
what does that sound like?
Jiminy Cricket, famous cartoon cricket. Second of all, anytime you hear SpongeBob joke bombs, and then you hear crickets. You know what I mean?
Once again, I have no idea. I'm once again allowing myself to suspend disbelief that these geriatric white guys know what it's like for these young hoppers, because I have to. The alternative is I can't invest myself in the process.
I agree completely. I will also suspend disbelief, but I will say, come on, here are the crickets. And so that's the episode. That's everything. We covered it all. So if we had to give a letter grade to this episode, and we do because it's the law, I think I would give this one a B plus. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, you know, you got to weigh a lot of pluses and minuses. You know, pluses, very exciting. Minuses, I don't buy the custody hearing. But I think it all adds up to the most solid of solid B pluses for me.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Matt Chrisman, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
I believe that every single, episode of television ever produced, is a B plus. And since this is an episode of television, it's a B plus.
That is, that is absolutely true. I think that is correct. It is a solid B plus episode of The Wire and a solid A plus episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. Matt Chrisman, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking The Wire with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Hell yeah. So where can people find you, and do you have any plugs?
Well, we got the Trapo Trap House podcast. You can check that out on Patreon or your SoundClouds, what have you. But we're also going on tour this month. We're going to be in L.A. This weekend, then New York and Fort Lauderdale. Tickets available at ChapoTrapHouse.com/live.
ChapoTrapHouse.com/live to get tickets for their upcoming tour. Well, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Thank you very much for having me.
We love having you. And congrats on getting married, dude.
Oh, thank you very much.
I just got married, too. So beautiful.
Oh, Mazel Tov.
Yeah, it's great. You know, now I can have sex.
Hell yeah. Through the sheet? Go for it.
Yeah, I got that hole in the sheet, and God loves it.
It keeps you from getting any of the goo on you.
Yeah, that's the thing about sex. Too much goo.
Goo!
So, yeah, congrats, and thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Patreon.com/Frogcast for all of the bonus episodes where Vince and I talk about other shit like movies and other TV shows. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. Vince, we have a new shout out this week.
Just one? Oh man.
Just one. I mean, we are recording all these episodes back to back to back before my baby comes. I have a baby coming, Matt. I'm about to be a dad, dude.
Awesome.
Thank you. I'm glad you're excited about it.
I'm sorry. It's just I just turned off my recording, and I realized, oh, crap, you're not recording this.
No, it's all good. We're still recording it anyways.
Well, yes, that's awesome. Oh, my God. I was just like, shit, I don't know. Now I'm going to be just a blank in the tape.
That actually would be funnier. Okay, so I'm a dad, and here is our new name this week, Stephen Hegedus.
Hegedus.
H-E-G-E-D-U-S.
Hegedus.
Yeah, gangster name. Give it to him.
We call him, where's Hygge come from? Is that Iceland or Denmark? I can't remember.
Oh, like I know?
We call this guy the Dane.
The Dane. All right. The Dane. Steven, thank you so much. That is your gangster name, The Dane. And you can get your own gangster name, patreon.com/frogcast. For the $8 tier, and we will pod you a shout out. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Yeah.
All right.
What Obama likes, it either means that he has good taste, or it means that he watched the show and decided to not do anything.
Hey, it's me, Matt Lieb. So, I broke my promise about playing a little bit of the Balmer B story for the guest and for Vince. But we go at the guest schedule sometimes and not necessarily at our own, especially not the schedule of the song. Speaking of the song... I wrote these lyrics was ready to record. And then my baby came. And so I didn't totally finish the song, but, here's what I got. This is a song from 2002 by a genius artist near and dear to all of our hearts, I think. I think you'll enjoy it.
I wanted to be like you. I wanted to be in the game. So I tried to be like you. And I had to sign my strip club away. I didn't know that I was just a front man. You needed someone who had a clean name. But Avon's brutish, his lawyer's Jewish, and now he's forced to do a five bust. What a shame. Fucked up in the game now, bitch. If you want to, I can take. With Stringer Bell, but soon he will be gone. If you want to, Omar will take you. He'll wear a wire so the police can hear. But Stringer's careful, says nothing illegal. All Omar wanted was to kill his best friend. To kill his best friend. And you need to know, Avon's who I'm talking about, bitch. Sucking on dicks, eating on clits. Fuck, he sucks. There's a baby downstairs. Oh no. If you want to, I'll eat your doo-doo. I can lum 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 inside of your ear. Don't care what's inside, just want you coming, and all I want is to eat on your butt.
Yeah, bitch, I'm Michelle Branch. I dated the drummer from the Black Keys, and then he cheated on me, and the police got called, and then I got arrested. Then I think I went on Twitter and was like, no, he's over. If you want to, you can get a divorce from the guy from the Black Keys, and then you can be single. Matt Lee was in love with you. Oh, I missed my chance. Anyways, I had a crush on her. I wanted to fuck. Good enough. What do you need? You don't need nothing. I got a baby. She's cute. I'm tired though, guys. Fuck.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.